You are listening to The Vitals, a bi-monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. In this episode of The Vitals, we spoke to Ellen Miller, a nurse practitioner with Vanderbilt University's Radiation Oncology Survivorship Clinic. She shares her experience with a 26-year-old woman who wanted to get pregnant after undergoing chemo radiation as a teenager. Miller underscores why some patients may not choose or not be able to pursue fertility preservation when they receive a cancer diagnosis, and what follow-up conversations might be necessary for survivors who have family-building goals following cancer treatment.
I'm Ellen Miller. I'm the nurse practitioner in radiation oncology at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. I've been in this role for the past almost 3.5 years now, and I see patients in follow-up after they've completed their radiation therapy, and I also do these survivorship visits for our department.
And could you briefly talk about what these survivorship visits look like in your department? What are some issues that you normally address with patients, and when and how often do you see them?
So survivorship visits are a routine follow-up. So what I mean by routine follow-up is, you know, we're always surveilling for cancer recurrence and also symptom management from the treatments that they've received. However, survivorship specifically has additional content that would be covered, which would make the visit a little bit longer than a routine follow-up. But some of that additional coverage would be long-term consequences of the treatment that they've received, making sure other health screens, like, for example, your mammograms, your pap smears, your PSAs, lung cancer screening, skin cancer screening, all of those, that they're up to date. As you can imagine, you know, a lot of patients through therapy will, especially if they're coming once a week or more frequently, some of those routine health screens get pushed out for a later date. So we want to make sure we're all back on track. And then discussing some of the psychosocial ramifications of a cancer diagnosis and treatment, and that can include anything from anxiety or fear of recurrence to financial concerns. And then lastly, making sure patients are aware of the resources that are available to them as cancer survivors. I often see patients for routine follow-up starting about 3 months after they've completed radiation. And then I try and get them in for a survivorship visit within the first year after they've completed therapy. Some patients just need the one-time survivorship and they go back to routine follow-up. And some patients will stay in survivorship for years to come if they're really struggling with some of the issues, and it gives them a safe space to talk.
And in the case of this patient, at what point in her care trajectory did you meet her, and how old was she when you met?
So this case is a little bit interesting. I met her pretty late in the game. She had been diagnosed at 19 when she was treated and diagnosed. I actually met her 5 years later and she was 26. Wow. So again, you know, like I said previously, I usually see patients within their first year of treatment for a survivorship, but for whatever reason, she hadn't been on my schedule to see yet. And so her physician asked me to see her 5 years later. But I was glad to meet her. And sometimes some of the things aren't as useful because some patients would have needed those resources that were available to them earlier in the game, but we can still talk about long-term consequences and still relevant information.
Right. And can you talk about this patient's cancer treatment? I know you mentioned she was diagnosed at 19. What was her diagnosis? What treatment did she receive and why?
So she was diagnosed with a T-cell lymphoma of the nasal cavity, and she went through some pretty hefty chemotherapy called the SMILE chemotherapy regimen. That's the dexamethasone, methotrexate, ifosfamide, asparaginase, and etoposide, as well as she had radiation, adjuvant radiation, 25 treatment days, 50 gray, that she completed April of 2017. And then because she also later in the game, it was about 3 years later, she had a rising EBV titer, which is your Epstein-Barr virus. She underwent rituximab 4 weekly doses. And so she had a little bit of extra therapy a couple of years later.
Yeah. And at the time of undergoing treatment, she elected not to undergo fertility preservation, right?
Could you discuss briefly, I know that you focus more on the survivorship angle of things, but why might a patient not want to or not be able to undergo fertility preservation at the time of diagnosis? And what are some barriers to fertility preservation that young adults or adolescent women might be facing?
Yeah, so when I talked with her, I asked her specifically, you know, were you offered fertility preservation? And she said, absolutely. And she declined because she said, I was 19. I didn't think I wanted kids, or, you know, just definitely not even on the radar of something. But she had met her husband, a wonderful man, and decided that she wanted to have kids. And believe it or not, when I saw her, she was a month postpartum with her first child. And so that was a really interesting visit too, because
was
actually two months postpartum with my first child. And so we really bonded over the no sleep. But then she, you know, wanted her desire to have children changed when she met her spouse. And she was considering more kids in the future. Mm-hmm. And so that was something we talked about. But I mean, one of the biggest things that I found, especially in doing some research of what does fertility preservation cost, it can be out of pocket for fertility preservation. The cost for embryo or egg freezing is $10,000 to $15,000 on average. And that's hard for anybody out of pocket, not to mention a young female or male, if you're, you know, there's fertility preservation for men as well. And so that out of pocket can be, I mean, absolutely devastating. It may not even be an option. Couple other things that I was thinking about, the barriers, that barrier that would exist, sometimes fear of passing cancer to children. You know, if that's something, especially as a young adult, some cancers are genetic. So the fear of maybe passing cancer on to a child. And then one other thing that I thought of was like uncertainty that if the cancer were to return, you know, is there family support? Like say, for instance, the cancer returned very aggressive and she passed away. You know, who would take care of that child? And those were just a few between, you know, articles that I was reading and things that I thought of. There's plenty of other barriers, but that was definitely some of the few that came to mind. Females are born with all the eggs that her body will ever produce. And so some treatments, including certain chemotherapies, pelvic or abdominal radiation, and even some kinds of radiation to the brain can impact hormones, like your FSH and LH. That can impact fertility, but also, of course, things like surgery. If you had to have a total hysterectomy or an oophorectomy for cancers, you know, that could reduce egg supply, lead to ovarian failure, all of these things, if not, you know, instantaneous infertility with surgery. In this patient's case, it was the ifosfamide that she received that would or could impact her fertility in the future.
Okay.
The fertility for preservation for women can include, like I said, the freezing eggs, and that's fertilized or not. That's the difference between the embryo versus egg freezing. You can harvest tissue from the ovaries. There's also radiation shielding to some of those organs if you can. And then there is some hormonal treatment for ovarian suppression, but this is still investigational. And then just a quick blurb on men and fertility preservation. It really utilizes sperm storage and also the shielding reproductive organs from radiation if you can. And again, I'd just like to say just a disclaimer here. I'm not a fertility specialist. So, you know, there may be things that I'm missing or, you know, not thinking about. But anyway, not a fertility specialist.
So she already had a baby.
Right.
When she realized that she wanted to have kids, what were her chances of getting pregnant? And were there any options to help her with her fertility after having received chemotherapy and radiation?
Yeah, well, and this is a little bit of a tricky question, because especially in females, you know, assessing fertility can be difficult, as sometimes infertility is temporary or it's permanent. So not only can chemotherapy damage existing eggs, but it can also lead patients to have early or premature menopause due to the chemotherapy or, you know, some other types of therapy as well. So it's really not recommended to delay childbearing if you know that you want to have kids, because that early menopause, I mean, is variable between women, and it can, you know, even happen in the mid-late 30s for some women. So patients post-treatment, they can have children without any additional intervention. Some patients will go on, like this young lady. She had no intervention. She just got pregnant, which is wonderful for her. And it is often safe for the mother and baby, but some women can experience longer or a more difficult time getting pregnant,
yeah.
which can be really disheartening for anybody who has, even women without treatment, just to undergo trouble getting pregnant is very disheartening. It is often recommended that patients wait a few years after treatment to try and get pregnant. And that's really for the reason that not that pregnancy impacts recurrence, but the main reason is really if there was a risk. Well, the risk of recurrence is higher in the first few years. And if the patient was to have a recurrence, the treatment and decisions for treatment could be more complicated. I mean, clearly that would yeah. complicate any kind of treatment.
Right.
And so she, like I said, was able to get pregnant without any assistance. But I did encourage her that if she was considering more children in the future, to make that a discussion with her OBGYN or if she was to see a fertility specialist, because she still could think about egg harvesting or further testing to evaluate her current fertility situation. Because again, she was 26, so she still had, you know, some time. She was still a young lady, but depending on how many kids you want, it could impact fertility if she hit that early menopause, possibly. So yeah. I did encourage her to discuss it with her OBGYN.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And ultimately, she had a successful pregnancy. I know that you just mentioned what some additional care monitoring might look like, but for patients who maybe meet your clinic mm-hmm. or they come in for survivorship after treatment and they say they want to start trying to have kids, what might a safe pregnancy look like post-treatment? What other options are available to help patients navigate that?
Yeah, I'll talk about at least some of the therapies that may require some specific monitoring. Mm-hmm. Again, not a fertility specialist, so there could be things that I'm missing out on, but some of the few that really could impact that we would want to monitor, any of the anthracycline chemotherapies, as well as if patients were to have left-sided chest radiation, which could include like a lymphoma or maybe even a breast cancer, we would potentially do some cardiac monitoring, as they can, both the chemo and radiation can be damaging to the heart. And pregnancy can cause the heart to work harder. I think we've all probably heard of women who experience cardiomyopathy, even healthy women, because of the labor of, not the labor itself, but the labor of carrying,
right.
well, I guess the labor itself too, but the labor yeah. throughout pregnancy of carrying a child can make your heart work harder.
Right.
And so this patient's pregnancy experience would have looked like a standard young woman being cared for by her OBGYN. As most patients who have undergone cancer treatments can conceive and will go on to have normal pregnancies. But something I found in doing a little bit of research was studies that included several thousand offspring of female cancer survivors and male cancer survivors who were treated for cancers in their younger years. They didn't have an increased risk of any like congenital abnormalities, which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
That they didn't have any increased risk for disorders or abnormalities. So again, that I would imagine that's really encouraging, because especially when you think about if you were to undergo all of this treatment and then have a baby that would be maybe unhealthy or have a disorder, that would be really disheartening as well. And that there isn't data that supports an adverse effect of prior chemotherapy on the risk of a miscarriage or spontaneous abortion, or even like a fetal demise, which is also encouraging as well, that, you know, if you are to get pregnant, that you may not have an increased risk of a devastating loss. And again, another piece of data that I found to be really encouraging and helpful was that there wasn't a higher incidence of cancer in the children that were born of cancer survivors, unless the patient's tumor was an inherited. So like the BRCA gene or yeah. Lynch syndrome, the FAPs, you know, things like mm-hmm. that are very genetically driven. And of course that would, you know, that's just unfortunate, but it was at least encouraging for me to see that patients who had babies, they weren't at a higher increased risk of cancers. And again, a couple of the things that were a little bit more that would require more monitoring would be sometimes some of the therapies could impact a female's ability to carry a pregnancy to term. So maybe some high doses of radiation to the pelvis, they could cause some scar tissue and restrict the growth of the fetus. And it could decrease some of the elasticity that, you know, allows the female body to stretch to house that pregnancy. Again, some of the research indicated that sometimes it can impact the blood flow to the uterus, could cause a little bit of risk for preterm birth or some of that growth restriction. And then obviously surgery, hysterectomies would impact a ability to carry. Mm-hmm. And so again, her trajectory for her experience was pretty standard. And we were thankful for that. But there are some reasons why some women would need further monitoring.
Yeah, and those are some really great points, and I think really important for women to know that those could be potential risks.
Absolutely.
But really promising what you were saying about the likelihood of a baby being able to be relatively healthy and not have an increased risk of cancer just because of their parents' experience.
Right.
And so for this patient, how is she doing now? How is her child? Are there any additional follow-ups that the baby needs in order to just check and make sure everything's according to plan? What does her survivorship care look like right now?
Yeah, well, she's doing really well and she remains in remission. She continues in follow-up with me. And at this time, mm-hmm. there's no concerns for her daughter's health, which is a wonderful thing that we just continue. You know, it would probably be a good thing to make sure, especially, you know, with any young child that they get their pediatrician visits. But you know, no special monitoring for her child that I know of. But again, it was a wonderful thing for her to be able to get pregnant without any intervention. And a couple of resources for patients. I wanted to just kind of highlight some of the things that are out there. And these are, of course, there are going to be some local things, but I wanted to touch on some of the national ones. There's the Alliance for Fertility Preservation. So that includes some of the states will have laws to require insurance coverage for fertility preservation. I think right now those states, and I just looked, but again, we could be missing one if they updated, but California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maryland, New York, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Utah. And those are states that require insurance coverage for fertility preservation. But that Alliance for Fertility Preservation can also list some specific laws and help patients work through the appeals process if there's denied coverage, which again, when we talk about that out-of-pocket expense, right. Even if they could get half or a third covered by insurance, that may be something that they could work towards being reasonable if it's not fully covered. And then there's Livestrong Fertility, which we all know Lance Armstrong created the Livestrong. If you weren't cool, if you didn't have one of those yellow bands that said Livestrong on it. But anyway, they have a Livestrong Fertility, and they have some discounted rates on preservation services. There's also Onco Fertility Consortium, and that's going to be some education. Verna's Purse is a financial assistance, and that's a really helpful, can be very helpful to get just some extra coverage, as well as the SAM fund. The SAM fund is a financial assistance. Now, this encompasses all young adults struggling financially due to cancer, not just fertility, but it also can include fertility. So those are just a handful of resources that patients can use, or nursing, nurse practitioners, physicians, anybody can tell patients about these resources and help, because I can't imagine, like I said, being a new mom as well, having undergone all of this to realize that I either can't have kids or I don't have the financial means in order to have kids. And there go all my future children dreams is just gone because I don't have the money. That would be absolutely devastating. So anyway, some of those resources can be super helpful with not only the hardship of being a young male or female with a cancer diagnosis, but then also just some added assistance and security for the future.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.